Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Today is April 29th, 2026. The markets were flat today, with the Dow closing slightly down at 48,861, the NASDAQ at 24,673, and the S&P at 7,135. The topic tonight is the elements of your financial life. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio this evening, and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we could talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You could speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Cindy, and she'll bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I also appreciate show ideas. For example, Nancy sent in a show idea, and I'm going to cover that topic next week, which is Roth conversions. I'm going to, maybe talk about the nuances of that and ways to think about it or plan for it and who can do it and all kinds of things like that. So thank you, Nancy, for that idea. So again, if you have questions and or ideas, you can go to yourfinancialchoices.com. Now, this topic, the elements of your financial life, it is a regular subject topic for me. It's always worth repeating. And I do want to talk about the elements of financial planning, why they're important, but I also like to highlight the standards for CFP professionals. Yes, I am a CFP professional, certified financial planner professional, because we do follow a code of ethics and standards. And I think it is worth pointing out that, just like someone can go to school doesn't necessarily make them smart. Just because someone has a designation doesn't necessarily make them, really great. It all depends. Obviously, designations help demonstrate that someone has certain skills or a certain knowledge level. So, for example, as a CPA and as a certified financial planner professional, we do have continuing education that we have to do. As a CPA, we have to do 80 hours of continuing education every 2 years, and CFPs have to do, I believe it's 35 hours. And you do have to have certain educational requirements in order to even sit for either of those exams. So I think that's important to know. But what happens sometimes, and the names of advisors has changed over the years, and that's why I think it's worth kind of pointing out. I remember when I first started in this industry, now I was working as a CPA for years before. I worked at a law firm for 9 years doing estate and trust work. And then I started at Valley National Financial Advisors almost, 26 and a half years ago. And back then, people talked about their broker. I have a broker. I have a broker. Well, then that started to kind of have like a different flavor to it. And people just thought, brokers are after commissions. They're not doing planning necessarily. And with the rise in awareness of a certified financial planner designation, with the rise in awareness of that and people realizing the difference between someone who's doing actual financial planning versus someone who's just a broker, then brokers, I feel, started, you know, referring to themselves as a financial advisor. So there could be a distinction. So I think it's really important for anybody who is considering working with someone to understand the distinction, understand the difference, and understand what you might be paying for or not paying for. Quite often, people will work with certain custodians and say, I have a financial advisor, but that financial advisor may not be able to give them any kind of tax advice. And as soon as you start asking tax questions, that's when you find out they have to give their little disclosures and say they can't give tax advice. Just like on this radio show, this is an educational radio show, I have to provide disclosures saying I cannot give necessarily specific financial advice to you because I cannot understand your financial situation as a listener. I don't know what is happening in your financial life. I'm doing general education. And the same could apply to your advisor. But there are those advisors who are certified financial planners who have been trained and studied and certified to give advice across the elements of your financial life, as I'm going to talk about. And I am suggesting that that could be a very significant and meaningful difference for you when you're trying to coordinate your planning. One other question I always say to clients is, you know, you need someone to answer the questions that you don't know to ask. And sometimes there are advisors or professionals, whether it's a CPA or a CFP or an attorney or an insurance agent or your broker, who may not know what questions to ask you. They may think you're going to come to them with the question. But what if you don't know what the question is you need to ask? And what if they're only concerned about what's happening with your investments, so they're only going to help you answer questions about your investments, but they may not answer the question of what happens to your estate planning if I do this with my investment? What's going to happen to your income tax return if I do this with my investment? What's going to happen with my asset titling of my, you know, investment account with my estate planning? So people or advisors may tend to stay in their lane, which is why I think I've stayed where I've stayed as long as I have, because it kind of brought together all of this, the nuances of someone's financial life and how they all work together. You know, very much like the engine of the car has to all work together. You know, everything in your body has to work together. You know, your breathing, your oxygen, your blood. You know, we want to make sure everything works together to get the maximum output from those decisions that you're making in your financial life. So the CFP board has, you know, continually updated their code of ethics, their standards, et cetera, and it really is to benefit and protect the public. So I'm going to, you know, read a little bit about what they do so that you understand. They provide the standards for delivering financial planning and advanced financial planning as a distinct and valuable profession. Compliance with the code and standards is a requirement of CFP certification. Code of Ethics delineates principles that guide behavior, which include acting with honesty, integrity, competence, diligence, and to have certain duties to clients, including acting in their best interest. The standards of conduct include a fiduciary duty to the client when giving financial advice or performing financial planning, as well as disclosure of fees and conflicts of interest, among other duties. The practice standards include the steps in the financial planning process as well, which include understanding the client's personal and financial circumstances, identifying and selecting goals, analyzing the client's current course of action and potential alternative courses of action, developing the financial planning recommendations, presenting the financial planning recommendations, implementing the financial planning recommendations, and monitoring the progress and updating. So that's kind of the outline of it, and that could take a broad scale, or it could be like a very detailed, perhaps, engagement of like one topic that might affect, you know, the other areas. So it doesn't have to be broad financial planning every time you're talking to your financial planner. It could be, you know, for circumstantial. Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about those elements of your financial life when we come back from the break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds. A powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax- and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 3.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and this evening we're talking about the elements of your financial life. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And I do want to mention a big thank you to everyone who donated to WDIY's Spring Fund Drive, especially last week. We had a slew of contributions came in at the end of the show. And the week before, I had put out a challenge, and I was happy to be able to meet that challenge. And then last week, I did a little extra gift at the end. So even though our fund drive is technically over, we are always happy for that little extra. You can always continue to do the extra. You don't have to wait for us to ask. And you can do that anytime through the WDIY app or online at WDIY.org just by clicking the donate button. And we sincerely appreciate it. It makes a big difference for us and for our energy level. I always feel like I have a lot more energy when I feel like the listeners are also supporting us. So I really appreciate it. I am a frustrated wannabe teacher. I love doing this and I want to continue to be able to do it. So talking about the elements of your financial life, I use this in every annual review meeting with clients. So I always say, okay, this is your annual review meeting. What does that mean? It means I want to talk about your cash flow, your income taxes, your retirement accounts or retirement planning, your risk management, your investment management, and your estate planning. And then I usually say, and you know, we may concentrate on one of those areas more than another. Because the idea of the annual review meeting is for you to be able to come in and say, hey, these are my concerns, these are my questions, these are my goals, this is what I need. So it's kind of like a little checkup, like an annual checkup that you get when you, you know, go to the doctor. But why we need to look at all six of those elements is because if someone comes in and says, hey, I want to do an addition to the house and it's going to cost, you know, $100,000. How are we going to do that? So we have to determine, do they have the cash flow to do it? Do they need to take money from the investments to do it? If we take money from the investments to do it, what is that going to do to the income tax? If it means we have to tap a retirement account, what does that do to their retirement savings and their income tax? And if they still intended to leave assets maybe to their children, what is that going to do to that? All right. Now, frankly, when you're taking money from, you know, your investments and putting it into your home, as in my example, you know, you're renovating, you're hoping that it still adds value to the home. So you're kind of really just moving it out of one asset class into another asset class. So that is very different than perhaps saying, oh, I'm going to take $100,000 and, you know, travel around the world. Well, you might not see a return in your investments for spending that $100,000, but you certainly will have, you know, returns on your memories and your experiences, because I always still believe in people should make sure they're having quality experiences as well. We just want to do it in a smart way, which is why I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. Let's be in front of your decisions instead of behind your decisions. Meaning if you came to me and said, oh, I put $100,000, I'm exaggerating, but there's a point. I put $100,000 on my credit card to take a round the world trip. Well, that might not have been the smartest thing if you're paying, you know, 29% interest rate on your credit card and can't pay it off. You know, maybe there would have been a way for us to talk it through with you and help you figure out how you could have that trip of a lifetime, maybe either a little bit more affordable, Maybe you wait a year or two and see how you do with your savings, and or where are we going to pull the money from in your investments? Because there could be smarter places to pull it than other places. Let me give you a really quick example. I've given this before. It's been years and years since this happened, but I thought it was such a telling example. When I had a young couple who, I think back then I was still doing the radio show, yeah, because they weren't clients, but they called and asked me if they wanted to talk about something, and they had already done it. It was too late, and it like broke my heart. They had, they were selling a home and buying a new home, and they did not sell their home, their old home, before they bought their new home, okay? They needed money to buy their new home, so they took money out of their retirement accounts. This was a young couple. When they took money out of their retirement accounts, they had income tax on it, and they had a 10% penalty because they took it out before age 59 and a half. They were young. So they had income tax and a 10% penalty because they needed a down payment for their new home. Well, they sold their old home, let's pretend 5 weeks after they bought their new home. So now they had the proceeds from the home they just sold and had the money available. If they had talked to me sooner, I would have told them that they could have done a 60-day rollover back into that retirement account, whereby they could have, it's called a 60-day rollover. It's allowed to take money out and then put it back in. They would have had to put the tax withholdings back in as well. So let's pretend they took $100,000 out, and there's a mandatory tax on that of, I think, 20%. So they would have netted $80,000. So when they got the proceeds from their old house, if they had cleared $100,000, they could have put $100,000 back into the IRA. Then they wouldn't have paid income tax on it because they put it back within 60 days. And then they would have had the $20,000, you know, original withholdings that could have come back to them on their tax return as a refund. All right. So they weren't aware of the 60-day rollover. And it was so sad because, you know, it was all just kind of like circumstantial things. And had they not, they didn't know to ask the question. And apparently there were no advisors there to tell them like what they were doing. I think if someone called me and told me they needed to take $100,000 out of their IRA, I would have had a conversation with them. But remember, there are certain advisors that can't talk about taxes. So they may not have been able to give tax advice. Now, in that circumstance, then you would hope that that young couple might have had an accountant. But if they were a young couple with a very simple situation with W-2s, they might not have an accountant. They might do their tax returns on their own. So it's just a little bit of a reminder that there are going to be circumstances in your life that maybe pop up and you weren't expecting them, you didn't know, and you just kind of reacted, or maybe you thought you were relying on a professional. Look for their designations, ask them if they can give tax advice, that kind of thing. That could have made a difference. Another situation I had one time, and again, these are people who weren't clients. They were, I think, just radio show listeners and calling and talking to me. And again, I like want to weep for not being able to help them beforehand. I was just telling someone today that one of the reasons I love doing this radio show is because I have always wished if only my parents had had an advisor. But another situation where a gentleman had inherited an IRA from his mother, and someone at the bank had told him he could put it in his IRA. So he took it out of mom's IRA that he inherited and put it in his IRA. That's not allowed. He had to do it as an inherited IRA. He couldn't put it into his own individual IRA. So it was deemed a complete distribution. Now, there is not a 10% penalty on a distribution from an inherited IRA. That's one of the exceptions. So he didn't have a 10% penalty, but he had all the income taxes on that IRA. Whereas if he had kept it in the inherited IRA, he would have had required minimum distributions with much less tax cost. All right. So kind of pay attention to these like life circumstances that can happen to you and know how they impact your financial life in those elements that we talked about. We'll talk about those specifically when we come back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, I'll do my best to answer those questions. And just a little reminder to our listeners, if you're interested, next week I'm doing a show on Roth conversions, and that was a request from Nancy that she sent through yourfinancialchoices.com. So if you do have show ideas, I'm always looking for topic ideas, folks. I've been doing this a really long time, and it's helpful to hear what listeners are interested in or want to learn more about, and I'm happy to do any research for you and share that with you. So tonight we're talking about the elements of financial planning: cash flow, income taxes, retirement, risk management, investment management, and estate planning. So cash, I've got lots and lots of stories, but let me go through the elements quickly. Cash flow, observation, I love saying this. This is something I also say frequently. People who think they don't have money usually do, and those who think they have money often don't. So reflect for a moment, because I think that, you know, one of my other stories is there was a couple who came in. I think I told this one even recently. There was a couple who came in and they loved going out. They loved going out dancing and going out to eat. And he said, yeah, you know, we treat for our friends quite often because they don't, you know, they don't have any money. And I'm thinking, you have no clue. I know your friends, and your friends have money. And the reason your friends have money is because they tell you they don't have any money and you treat. So, you know, just kind of be aware of that. Like if you ever find yourself in those situations where you're going out with someone and they're always telling you that they don't have any money, it might be just that they don't have money because they're on a budget or because they're careful with their money. It doesn't mean they don't have money. They're just choosing not to have money to spend on whatever that might be, those extras and things like that. And you can still find ways to have fun without having to spend too much money. So just be aware of that. The other saying I often have is people who know how much money they spend are also usually the ones who have money. I don't like living so strictly. And we often talk about the funnel method when we're at work. We talk about the funnel method for people who don't want a budget. And this goes back to the cash flow element. If you don't want a budget, you can say, how much are your non-discretionary expenses? So your rent or your mortgage, your taxes, your insurance payments, your utilities, your food. These are non-discretionary. You just have to have this much money every month. And let's pretend, I'm going to just make up a number. Let's pretend that's $3,000. And let's pretend your net take-home pay is $4,000. And that's after your retirement savings and everything. So you have $4,000 net pay and your expenses are $3,000 a month. If you put your $4,000 into a savings account, direct deposit into a savings account, $4,000, and move $3,000 to your checking account. So automatically $4,000 into savings. If you can split your deposits, that's okay too. You could do 3-in-1. So that every month, your savings account should be growing $1,000 a month. At the end of the year, in this story, you would have $12,000. Now, recognizing that your expenses aren't always even every month at $3,000, you know, there'll be times your expenses might be $2,500 and another month they might be $3,500. You know, you want to build in a little bit of a flow there. Quite often, you could put your savings account as a backup to your checking account in case you overdraft. It just pulls from your savings account. A lot of banks do that. But for the most part, it should average out. And then you're building up your savings. The first thing you want to do, cash flow, is build up your emergency reserve. Critical. Why is it critical to have the emergency reserve? Because you can also use a credit card a little bit as an emergency reserve. The trouble with that is we want you to pay off your credit card every month. So it's nice to be able to have that in case. But we want you to really not rely on a credit card. We want those credit cards paid off every month, because why should you pay somebody else 25% or 30% when if you keep your money in the bank, you're earning nothing to maybe 3%. Why would you pay someone else 25 to 29% interest? Okay, so that's why we don't want to use credit cards. It's like takes forever to get out from under them. You can do it. If you have them, you can do it. I'm going to cheer you on for that, but you know, try not to get into that situation where you do it, because that's why we want the emergency reserve, the cash for those unexpected expenses like, oops, car repair, tires, you know, whatever it might be. Nothing's cheap anymore. So you can use your emergency reserve for that. Once your emergency reserve is more than what you need, so usually, you know, back in the day, we would say 3 to 6 months. I always say now 6 months to a year, because you never know with jobs and things like that. If you only have yourself to rely on, if it's a dual income family, you might have a little bit more flexibility. But if you're kind of on your own, you know, I tend to lean toward a longer or a larger emergency reserve. So once you have your emergency reserve, if you see that money building up, then you have the opportunity to invest. And you could invest. So here's another element, investing. So now if you have that extra cash flow, you can invest, and you may have the opportunity to invest several ways. And you may invest in an individual brokerage account where you may invest in exchange-traded funds, index funds, mutual funds, individual stocks, whatever it might be, bonds, whatever it might be. You could invest as an individual. Or you may say, hey, you know what? All these years, I haven't reviewed my retirement account at work. Maybe I can put more in my retirement account. I've only been doing 3%, or I haven't been doing anything. And maybe now you could up it to 6% or 10%. You could increase potentially your contributions to your retirement account at work. Now, if you do it on a pre-tax basis, that impacts what? Taxes. So you see how your cash flow has now impacted your investment, has impacted your taxes. If I do it on a pre-tax basis, if I put an extra $1,000 into my retirement account on a pre-tax basis, I might only feel that in my cash flow like $800. I'm, you know, assuming like an average tax rate of 20%. So it's not costing me $1,000 to put it into my retirement account. It might only cost me $800 because I'm saving taxes today. But I could also have the opportunity, maybe I'm not in that high of a tax bracket, I'm in a lower tax bracket, maybe I want to do it on a Roth basis. So I'm not going to get a tax deduction today, but I'm going to get that Roth growing income tax free. So now in this scenario, we just talked about cash flow, we talked about investments, we talked about retirement accounts, and it could be estate planning as well, because we've saved for retirement. We name beneficiaries on our retirement accounts, and now we've got some estate planning going on. So you see, it's like a little bit of a, you know, a snowball going down the mountain, and it's picking up all the little debris as it goes along the way. And that's your, you know, financial life. It's a snowball picking up all these little parts of it. So we are going to continue our discussion talking about the elements of financial planning, cash flow, income taxes, retirement, risk management, investment management, and estate planning, and how when you are thinking about one area of your financial life, please, please do not forget to understand how it's impacting all those other areas as well. So we'll keep kind of going over some of those topics and telling little stories to demonstrate how they work together. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Bob and Cindy and they'll bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 and at yourfinancialchoices.com, discussing the elements of your financial life this evening. So cash flow, let me just give you some bullet points on that. Cash flow, that could come from wages. It could come from pensions, Social Security, annuities, survivor benefits, meaning you might have inherited something. It could come from your savings accounts. Cash flow could come from investments. In fact, let me mention that for a moment. Often when people are working, they have their salary coming in. So they have cash flow. And if they're fortunate enough and lucky enough to have excess money to save, they might put the money in investments. And we've all heard of DRIP plans, dividend reinvestment plans. So quite often people will set it up to automatically invest the income, and it's buying additional shares of whatever it might be that they invested in, whether it was individual stocks through like a transfer agent, you know, a program, maybe even at work, or with your investment advisor, your broker, whatever it might be, you might say, yes, let's reinvest the income. So when those assets pay dividends, you're reinvesting right back into the investment that you first invested in. All right, dividend reinvestment. Now, what happens, though, is every time you're reinvesting those dividends, you are paying tax on that. When you get it, you see it on your 1099. We pay tax on the dividends. We pay tax on the income. And now if we buy new shares with those dividends, let's pretend I have a dividend of $500 and I buy, you know, 2.7 shares with my $500. Now I start a new holding period for that shares I just bought. I have to hold those a year before it's long term. So in your mind, you might think, oh, I have those 500 shares. Now those 500 shares are 600 shares and it's long term because I've had that for so long. But you kind of forgot that really the most recent shares you have are short term because you just bought those through dividend reinvestment. When you go to sell something, let's say you want cash and you tell the advisor, oh, you know what? I don't like that position anymore. Let's just sell out of that. You might incur short-term capital gains because you forgot about the dividend reinvestment. So one thing about cash flow, if you need cash flow, you might think, oh, I'll do it from the investments, but you want to understand the nature of the tax on the cash flow that you're receiving. Long-term capital gains are taxed at lower tax rates. Short-term capital gains are taxed at ordinary rates. So be aware of that. And you may or may not have known that you could do tax lots. You could go in and say, I want to sell the oldest shares, or I want to sell these shares I bought in, you know, April of 2025, or well, that would have been a low basis. So maybe I want to buy, you know, sell something that has a high basis. So you can go in and pay attention to the tax lots and the holding periods of investments you make. But further, I want to remind people that maybe you were doing that while you were working, and then you realize you're retired now, you have to replace your paycheck. How are you going to do that? Some people will, you know, maybe start Social Security, or they'll start a pension, or maybe they'll just take money out of their savings. Well, one of the further ways that you can bolster your cash flow in your retirement is to stop the dividend reinvestment. Number one, it stops you from having those short-term gains, you know, on shares that you just purchased in the past year. But then it also provides that extra little bit of cash flow that you might need without having to sell other investments. Okay, so if you look at that and pay attention to that, might make a difference. That's something to think about. We had Elizabeth call in from Bethlehem off air, and she asked, what are the ramifications of naming your estate as the beneficiary of retirement accounts? 401k and IRA, are there differences? Elizabeth, great question. And there are significant ramifications. So, I mean, it's a great, great question. And this goes back to being careful about when you're getting financial advice or professional advice, who you're talking to make sure not only are you coordinating the elements of your financial life, but you're also coordinating your advisors, because you might go to your attorney for estate planning and say, this is what I want, but that attorney might not know who you put as a beneficiary on your accounts, on your retirement accounts. So let's talk about that for a minute. First of all, the difference, if you name your estate a beneficiary on the 401k or the IRA, it is the same ramification, all right? What happens is when you die and you leave your IRA to someone or something, that beneficiary who inherits your retirement account is going to have to take it out. Nowadays, if you're a non-spouse, other than some, a few exceptions, they typically have to take it out within 10 years. That's the new law. So you have to take it out within 10 years. But in that 10-year period, if the decedent was required minimum distribution age, meaning they were 73 or older, that beneficiary has to take it out over their life expectancy, the beneficiary's life expectancy, but all of it within 10 years. So let's pretend I'm 40, my life expectancy, I'm making this up, is 50, and I inherit your IRA, I'm an individual, I have a 50-year life expectancy, I can take, you know, whatever the life expectancy factor is for 50 years. The first year, the second year, the third year, the fourth year, through the ninth year, by the 10th year, I have to take the whole balance out. I could always take out more, but I have to take a minimum amount out if the decedent was RMD age. If the decedent was not required minimum distribution age, then I can wait until year 10 to take it all out. So if the decedent was age 70, I'm inheriting, I have a 50-year life expectancy, I don't have to take anything out in the first 9 years, but I have to take it all out by year 10. So quite often then I'm kind of planning and maybe trying to smooth out the tax cost of that. So I might take a little bit more out or not. Now, Elizabeth, if you heard me say something, I was purposely saying some key words. You heard me say, as an individual, my life expectancy. Let's think about this for a minute. If I name my estate the beneficiary of my IRA, what life expectancy does an estate have? They're not an individual. The estate does not have a life expectancy. The estate would be required to take the distribution out within 5 years. Okay? Now, some tiny little bit of exceptions to that. There might be something called a testamentary trust under the will. So think last will and testament. And I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice. I'm just understanding that if you have a testamentary trust that says, in my testamentary trust, if my estate says to my spouse, but if my spouse doesn't survive, I'm giving all my money to my niece or nephew. And if any retirement accounts happen to come into my testamentary trust, I want you to look through, it's called the look through trust provision. I want you to look through if any retirement accounts come through this testamentary trust, you can look at them for their life expectancies. So that's why it's really, really, really important to work with an attorney if you're having some of this done, so that they put in the proper language to make sure that it looks through. Because otherwise, it is an accelerated distribution within 5 years. So let's pretend you've got someone running the estate. Now, again, you might be gone. You don't care. You might not care at all. But maybe as a good steward during our lives, we want to help preserve the assets that we've left for whomever that might be. If your estate says everything to charity, it doesn't matter because it's going to charity and there's no life expectancy and there's no income tax. Personally, if I have people who are giving money to charity and you have a retirement account, I'd rather you give the whole retirement account to the charity. Don't do it through the will. Why should they have to wait for the whole probate process? Just give the IRA or the 401k directly to charity if that's what you intended to do. No reason to probate in that case. But, well, in that circumstance, if that's for that particular asset. So you want to be very, very careful. I rarely will see or suggest that someone should put the estate as a beneficiary on a 401k or an IRA. I think there's always other ways to work around that. All right. Because sometimes, too, if you're giving money to charity through a will, you have to work with the attorney general of the estate. And if, you know, if all your assets are in retirement accounts and you intend to give them to charity, then, again, just do it direct. But if you're looking to individuals, you know, I like to see the individuals named. And you can name, let's pretend you have an individual who you think it should be in trust for them. Again, working with an attorney, they could still put that trust language as a beneficiary on the 401k or the IRA. I'm working with someone right now where the attorney gave us the language and said, if my spouse, you know, passes away, if I pass away before my spouse, then this money goes into this testamentary trust for my spouse. And if not that, if my spouse does not survive me, then it goes to these other people. So the attorneys can help, you know, kind of follow that flow, but you have to make sure that you update it as well. So I hope I explained it enough that you know how that would work. You can do a lot with beneficiary designations. You know, there's primary beneficiaries, there's contingent beneficiaries. If your primary beneficiary doesn't need the money, they can disclaim it within 9 months within a qualified disclaimer, and then it can go to the contingent. I talked about that last week. So great question, Elizabeth. I'm glad you called and asked. Thank you so much. So cash flow can come from any number of sources. We want to be aware of the income tax cost of cash flow items that we get. I like people to know what kind of income they have and how it's taxed, meaning salaries, Social Security, pensions, annuities, interest income, rental income, all ordinary income, taxed at ordinary income tax rates, qualified dividends on your investments that you hold individually or jointly. Those qualified dividends qualify for lower tax rates. Long-term capital gains qualify for lower tax rates. Capital gain distributions qualify for lower tax rates. Be aware of the kind of income you have and how it gets taxed. That can make a difference. Retirement accounts, I like people to be aware of their required minimum distributions. If you're charitably inclined, use your if you're charitably inclined and you have required minimum distributions, meaning you're 73 now, 70 and a half or older, you can do a qualified charitable distribution directly out of your IRA and not pay income tax on it. Why would you take a distribution from an IRA, if you are required minimum distribution age, why would you take a distribution from an IRA, put it in your pay tax on it, put it in your bank account, and then write a check to the charity? Qualified charitable distributions directly from the IRA to your charity. Now, I will tell people, we do not want you writing $50 checks. Or, well, it's not you writing the check, it's the custodian writing the check. But if you are someone who does, you know, 200 donations of $50 or $100, then you would want to ask your advisor or your custodian, can I get check writing on that IRA? And then you color code that checkbook. You color it pink with a big pink highlighter or yellow highlighter, and you write charity only. You do not take that checkbook to the grocery store. You use it for charity, and you write the checks, all those teeny tiny little checks you like to write. Believe me, I'm not judging. I write teeny tiny checks too, but I do, you know, big checks too. you can do, I'm not RMDH, but if I was RMDH, I would be taking money out of my IRA. I don't have an IRA, I have a 401k, but I would be, and it's not allowed out of a 401k. The qualified charitable distributions are only allowed out of IRAs. But I would definitely be doing them out of there because you don't pay tax on it. It's great. Okay, because so many of us don't benefit from itemizing deductions anymore. So if you don't benefit from itemizing deductions and you know you're going to get the deduction for the qualified charitable distribution of your retirement account, what elements did we just hit? We hit cash flow, we hit taxes, we hit retirement accounts, and really almost estate planning, because charitable giving to me is also part of your estate planning. All right, folks, we're at the last break. If you have questions, there's still time. There's also the website. I'm surprised how many people don't send me questions, but you can do that through yourfinancialchoices.com or by calling 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about the elements of your financial life tonight. It's actually one of my favorite topics, this and estate planning. I mean, and taxes. I actually love this stuff. I could talk about it all night, but I don't have all night. I only have like 13 more minutes. So if you have questions and you don't have time to talk or call in tonight, you can always send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. But if I can help anybody, I want to stress the importance of understanding how these elements work together. I once wrote an article. I used to write a column for the Morning Call years ago, and I used as an analogy a pool table. If any of you have played pool, you know how you rack the balls and they're all those different colors, and then you have the cue ball and you break them, right? And they go all over the table. Well, to me, that's your financial life. It's going, you know, those balls go all over the table. And, you know, you're playing the game and you hope to, you know, get some into the, oh gosh, I don't even know all the pool table terms, and some of you might know. But you hit one ball and boom, two or three other balls get hit, you know, depending on your situation. And to me, that's your financial life. You go after one thing and you don't realize the impact on all these other areas. So that's what I want to stress over and over again. And if you sit down and, you know, pull out your tax return, I always say to people, your tax return tells a story. I can tell you if you're typically, I can tell if you're a conservative investor. I can tell if you're a good saver. I can tell if you're, you know, have enough in cash flow. There's a lot that the tax return can tell us. But let's go for a moment to investment management as one of these elements. So I talked about how you may be pulling from your investments for cash flow. I talked about the different characteristics of that income. It could be short-term gains, which are taxed at ordinary rates. It could be dividends or interest from bond-like investments. So not all dividends qualify for a lower tax rate. It could be a dividend from a mutual fund that has bond investments. So that could be ordinary income. You want to understand what I call like the geography of your investments. So if your IRAs and 401ks are pre-taxed, you're going to pay ordinary income when you take it out, correct? What did I just tell you pays ordinary income? I said bond-like investments, fixed income, that pays ordinary income. So if the IRA is going to pay ordinary income anyway, personally, I like to skew ordinary income over there. Personally, I actually don't have any of that. I'm very much equities. But if I were, I would skew my ordinary income over into the retirement accounts because I know that's going to come out as ordinary income. Where I really would like to see the tax-favored investments would be in my individual account or my joint account, my brokerage account, where I have tax-favored investments like qualified dividends and long-term capital gains. And when I say qualified, what does that mean? Qualified means it qualifies for a lower tax rate. Back in, I think during the Bush years, people always complained about double taxation on dividends because corporations would pay tax. So they say corporations would pay tax, then they'd pay out these dividends to their shareholders, and then the shareholders would have to pay tax on the dividends. So to kind of mitigate the penalty of that double taxation, they lowered the tax rate on these dividends paid by our, you know, typically domestic corporations, sometimes foreign too, but typically domestic corporations, when they pay a dividend, it qualifies for a lower tax rate for that reason, to kind of avoid a little bit or mitigate the impact of double taxation. So I would like to see on investments that I have currently lower taxes, again, qualified dividends, long-term capital gains. Now, eventually, when I have to take money out of my retirement accounts, that's going to be ordinary income anyway. So while I'm working, I might have, you know, growth investments in my retirement accounts because I can't touch it. You know, there's penalties to take it out early. So if I can't touch that money, I'm, you know, 30 years old and I've got, you know, a 35-year career in front of me, I might be invested in equities and take more risk with that money because I have a longer timeline. Quite often, people, as they get closer to retirement, will back off on the equity exposure because they're going to need some of that money. They don't want to take it out when the markets are, you know, erratic or down. So sometimes people get a little bit more conservative in part of their investments because they want to preserve that money for when they retire. And in that case, that's where I'm going to like turn on the spigot for the more ordinary income, kind of fixed income piece, to be a little bit more conservative, maybe on that part I know I'm going to be taking out for cash flow. I don't want to take it out when the market's down. All right. So pay attention to your diversification, not only in the kinds of investments you have, but in how you're invested, whether it's retirement accounts, pre-tax retirement accounts, individual accounts, or Roth IRAs. So the Roth, if it's income tax free, what do I want to happen there? Let's think about that for a minute. Income tax free, wouldn't I want that to grow? I might take more risk with that because I want it to grow. And if it can grow tax free, then I'm probably going to want it to grow as long as it can tax free, which means it's typically a longer timeline for a Roth. And then guess what else that hits? It also could end up hitting our estate planning. If you are someone who has children, often people want to pass assets on to their children. What a gift to be able to pass on an income tax-free asset to your children. It's almost like, you know, you kind of have covered the taxes up front for them. So now in that case, it's investments, tax savings, and estate planning. Okay? So Roth, and back to Elizabeth's question about the 401k and the IRA. And I told you there's required minimum distributions. If someone was required minimum distribution age, that does not apply to Roth IRAs. So if I'm 90 and I die and I have a Roth IRA, it still would be subject to that 10-year payout, but there is no required minimum distribution to my heir who's inheriting that to do it within the 10 years, because I did not have a required minimum distribution on the Roth. My beneficiary is not going to have a required minimum distribution on the 10-year period, but by the 10th year, they do have to take it out. So if you can imagine, if I had my financial calculator here, I could tell you what this looks like. It's incredible. Let's pretend I have a $100,000 Roth IRA that I die and my children inherit it. They don't have to take it out for 10 years and it's, you know, has a really decent rate of return. That could end up being, you know, $200,000 10 years later at no income tax cost to them. You see the power of compounding and the power of income tax free growth using the Roth IRA. So investment management, you want to be aware of your own risk tolerance. You know, I throw out things like, oh yeah, I'm all equities, but you know, that might not be for you. I do want to point out something else that I've kind of mentioned to people. Quite often I'll have people say, oh, I don't want to take any risk. I don't want to take any risk. And then I show them the chart of, you know, a very flat line. And then I show them the chart of a line that like skyrockets. And the difference is, you know, equity exposure versus fixed income. And the disparity is significant over a period of years. And so you've got to be careful when you talk about not taking risk, because if you think you're not taking risk to preserve your money, but you're actually taking risk on not making any money. Okay. So it's all about balance, understanding your risk tolerance, your balance and diversification, and understanding your asset geography as well. Let me touch quickly on estate planning. So as part of these elements, we have, you know, talked about a number of the elements with the estate planning, the beneficiary designations. That's estate planning, people. So just make sure you have your documents in order. So many people don't. I mean, it would be my lifelong goal to make sure everybody has their estate plan documents. If they don't have their will, their power of attorney, their health care, you know, you're just doing a disservice to those people who need to support you either in your time of need when you can't speak for yourself, whether it's as a power of attorney or a healthcare power of attorney, or when you die, leaving a big mess for those people. So, you know, try to do your estate planning, but even as a stopgap, at least put beneficiary designations on those types of accounts where you can, for your retirement accounts, even bank accounts and brokerage accounts these days, you can put a beneficiary designation on. So make sure you coordinate that as well. And the one I didn't talk about was risk management. And people also, what's risk management? Well, think risk. What's risk? You insure risk. So sometimes people will want to offload the risk they otherwise would take. So let's pretend I buy, you know, a $350,000 house and I'm worried, what if something happens to it? A sinkhole, a flood, a fire. $350,000 might be a big investment that if I don't insure it and something happens, I may not be able to, you know, pay off my mortgage or replace that home. So typically people are buying homeowners insurance to insure against the risk of loss. And you work with your insurance agent to talk about what those risks might be and what other riders you might need on your policy if you are in an area that has sinkholes or if you are in an area that has, you know, a flood plain or something like that. So you want to make sure you, or hurricanes. So you want to have your insurance for your property. You might want to consider umbrella insurance. Umbrella insurance is, you know, would give you extra coverage over your auto and your homeowners. Some people will get life insurance. Some people will get long-term care insurance. And you know, for years, people might have bought long-term care insurance years ago, and it got more and more expensive. Maybe they dropped it. But there are other options today for long-term care insurance as well. It could be like a hybrid policy, a mix of life insurance and long-term care. If you don't need the long-term care, then it could turn into a life insurance policy. So there are different options. But you could also do things like self-insure, meaning make sure you have enough assets in the event something happens to you. So you don't always want to spend all your money. And clients don't often understand, like sometimes as advisors, we're trying to manage their assets today, of course, for their use and their lifetime. But we always kind of have to keep in mind longevity. Life expectancies are getting longer and longer. And we think, you know, you might not know yet because maybe you're, you know, 65 and you don't realize that we've worked with, you know, hundreds of clients that when they turn 75, all of a sudden, you know, it's the teeth, it's the hips, it's the knees, it's implants, things that might not be covered by insurance, you know, the eye lifts. So we have to kind of pay attention to all of that. And then OPS, assisted living, you know, memory care. So if you don't have that long-term care insurance, how else might that get paid? And, you know, it's kind of making sure all of these elements are working together. So I think I touched on a number of them. Real quick, retirement benefits, if they're offered at work and they offer a match, you know, at least try to get the match put in something so that you get the match because that's free money as well. Tons and tons more we could talk about, but I hope it was helpful for you to at least understand to coordinate your financial decisions and understand that the impact of one decision hits all those other areas or could hit some of those other areas as well. And if you understand them, you could be in front of those decisions and be a little bit more better, you know, financially better off by being in front of the decisions and understanding how they work together. And in the end, over time, that has kind of compounding benefits to you. All right. As I mentioned, next week, I have a show idea from Nancy, who sent in the request for a show on Roth conversions. So boy, oh boy, I'm going to have a whole hour to talk about that. We'll see how that goes. I might have to throw in some extra stuff. But thank you, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Elizabeth, for calling in. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, James. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.